Once again, we are very fortunate to have Mr. Mark Miller here today to give us the words of comfort.
Well, your pastor is on sabbatical, so you have to settle for me today and next Sunday. So I think Paul should have stayed up here. He's doing a tremendous job. I know you're probably familiar with him at ball games, but I think you do a better job even as worship leader. I was told that I was looking at statistics, and they said Father's Day tends to be one of the lowest attended Sundays at church. So I was expecting Paul and Sheila and myself here and maybe my family. So I am happy you guys are here. What I want to do is depart from the sermon for just a second, then I'll go back to it. Father's Day is today, so I'm getting to be an old guy. I'm wearing readers now and dropping my pen. And I see younger guys, and I remember back when I was starting out, especially starting out in the family and so forth. And there was a few people that really kind of poured into my life. You know, of course, your parents. It's amazing how many things that you do because you saw your parents do. But there was some of those things I went to and events that poured, guys that poured into my life. And one of the things that really hit me being a dad is stepping up and being a spiritual leader for your family. That wasn't a simple concept. And what was even more intimidating is when somebody says that we're going to have to stand before God and answer for how we led our family spiritually. That was even more intimidating. And so if you wouldn't mind, I'll just take a minute or two, talk as an old guy with a little gray coming right here, to the rest of you. If I had to do life over again, what would I do to make for sure that I passed on my faith or faith in God in general? Let me boil it down to two things. The scriptures talk about in Deuteronomy about when to pass on your faith, make it an everyday thing. When you walk along, when you talk, when you lie down at night, that let these words of the scripture always be there. And I'm like, how do you do that? And so what I want to do is show you a couple things here that influenced my life. I try to keep it simple. There was two things that I tried to do that I learned from other people. I can't take any credit of this. One was to do devotions with my kids at night. I would not never change that. I'd go back and do that again. It was hard because a lot of times we're working late or whatever else, but to try to be there consistently, be the one that puts your kids to bed, and then pull out some kind of book. And I wasn't good at coming up with all kinds of stuff, but I did like find stuff that was really good. So let me give you what I would do if I do over again. One is if your kids are really little, have them sit in your lap and get this. I just made a picture copy of this. This is called Read With Me Bible. Great little picture book with full color and everything like that. And when they're little, can barely sit there long enough, just start paging through that and then pretty soon read it. And I'd really highly recommend this. The second best thing I'd recommend when they get a bit older, maybe 3 or 4, all the way up to probably almost teens. This is called Little Pilgrim's Progress from Helen Taylor. It was an adaptation of Pilgrim's Progress, which is one of the most widely read books ever printed besides the Bible. And this is one of those that are short chapters that your kids are going to say, more, Dad, more, more, more. Highly recommend this. The third thing I'd recommend is this book called Old Story New. It basically takes you through the whole, this one is the New Testament. There's another one that's the Old Testament, and it takes you through it in bits and pieces. And there's questions and answers, and first you think, well, that'd be pretty boring, but actually it's not. And you basically teach your kids the Bible by just sitting there every night and doing 5 minutes. The second thing I would do, besides reading to my kids, is praying for your kids. Somebody really challenged me is go into your kids' room at night when they're sleeping and pray over them. I did that. And, yeah, it was one of those things that I highly recommend. Even not going necessarily in their room, you might freak them out if they wake up. But just always remembering to pray for them, pray for their future spouse. It's amazing what the power of prayer does. So with that being said, there was one statistic that I found very interesting. It says, according to the data collected by Promise Keepers and the Baptist Press, if a father does not go to church, even if his wife does, only one child in 50 will become a regular worshiper. If a father does go regularly to church, regardless of what the mother does, between 2/3 and 3/4 of their children will attend church regularly as adults. Power of a father leading spiritually. Let me read one more thing. Another survey found that if a child is the first person in a household to become a Christian, so like no one in your household is a Christian, and a child is the first one to become a Christian, there is a 3.5% probability everyone else in the household will also become Christians. And now if the mother is the first to become a Christian, there is a 17% probability that everyone else in the house will become a Christian. However, when the father is the first one in the house to become a Christian, there is a 93% probability everyone else in the household will become a Christian. Dads, do not fall into the world saying that you have no authority. All you are there is to make dad jokes. And they're funny. But don't put away your call. So with that in mind, what I want to do is transition to probably the scriptures that Solomon was probably the best known for, some of the best passing on advice to his son in the book of Proverbs. So Solomon wrote to his son over and over, son, look out for this. And Proverbs is just chock full. And so he continues on with the book of Ecclesiastes. And so I'm going to talk about Ecclesiastes chapter 1 today. And it really focuses on what is meaningful and what is life all about. Ecclesiastes, people look at it and say, wow, that's kind of a sarcastic, very morbid book. And it starts out that way because what it starts out with in Ecclesiastes is that he starts out with a view of what is life like, trying to find meaning in this world without looking to God. And so if you guys wouldn't mind grabbing your Bibles or even your pew Bibles there and trying to find the book of Ecclesiastes. And like I said, as you work your way through, you'll find Psalms in the middle of the Old Testament, which was written by his father David. And then we'll go into Proverbs, and then you'll work your way to finally to the book of Ecclesiastes. And this is where we're going to camp out. I'm going to cover chapter 1 today and then chapter 2 next Sunday. So Ecclesiastes is a teacher of an assembly or a board. And so not only is this passing on to his son, but it's passing on to many people, sons, daughters. And Solomon is an interesting character because he's considered to be one of the wisest men that's ever lived. He's also done some of the most incredibly foolish things in his early life. And so he goes through this phase where he marries all these other women from different countries to make these inroads with other kingdoms and kings, but those wives influenced him. And he goes down some interesting paths, and his heart is very influenced in the middle part of his life. As he comes back around to the end of his life, he starts to write these things and saying, "Son, listen to me." And this book of Ecclesiastes continues that. If I had to do life over again, this is what life's about. This is meaning. And so he starts out saying, so what is life like, which I have done, without trying to find meaning, looking to God first? So he'll keep using the phrase, this happens under the sun, under the sun. So we're going to find that he uses that over and over, meaning the world without God. So let's go ahead and take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. He's talking about himself, King Solomon. And meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. So his words start out like fingernails on a chalkboard. This is how he starts out this assembly to these young people sitting before him. He's saying that everything that you do without God is profitless, that you won't end up in the black. He's using this accounting type of a thing. You will not end up in the black. You will always end up in the red, trying to find meaning without God. You will die. The preacher who does your burial service will die. The grave digger who dug your grave will die. Sorry, Jim. The shovel that he used will go into the dirt. The people that were at your funeral, they will go into the dirt. Everything is meaningless. Happy Father's Day. So from dust you came, and to dust you shall return. Verse 4. Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. So how many of you know all of your grandparents' names? How many of you know all of your great-grandparents' names? About two. Three. The Walters, I know that you guys know. So what is going to happen? Your kids' grandchildren will not know anything about you except maybe your name. Read on. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it hurries back to where it rises. So what we're going to be looking at is that Solomon starts to compare this world to what people think gives us meaning. So a lot of times people will start looking at, well, we need to look at nature. So he says, let's look at nature then. So we're taking a look at this machine. He describes this world as a machine that goes round and round. So take a look at again at verse 5. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. It's like a gear. It just keeps going. And if you look at it like there's something out there, there's something that's going to give me meaning, it just keeps moving. It's not going to stroke you. It's not going to say, hey, good job. It just keeps going. Verse 6, the wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. Verse 7, the streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, they return again. So the winds go round and round. The streams flow into the rivers, into the oceans, and evaporates into clouds, which turns into rain, which comes back down again, and saying that the sea never fills up. What's interesting is a lot of people will say, oh, the Bible, that's not a scientific book. But did you know it was until John Dalton in the 1800s who finally determined all the mechanisms for this hydrological system? And here the Bible's got it all laid out. But God says, don't look at those things for meaning. They're like a gear that's inside a gear that's inside a gear. And the sun and the earth goes round and round. And the winds on the earth go round and round. And the rain and evaporation, it goes around and round. And it's and they just keep going. And they keep grinding. And we look at it and we're like, hey, we're going to find meaning in this. We just keep going on. And they keep grinding up. And they ground up Plato. They ground up Socrates. They ground up Hitler. They ground up Stalin. They ground up Elvis. They ground up your great-grandmother and great-grandfather, and they'll grind you up as well. So anything passed on from when you are gone is all that's left, and that's going to be squandered by your next generation. All right, how are we doing? So we need to till the ground before we can plant and harvest. And Solomon's showing what it's like to be without God under the sun. Let's continue on, verse 8. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye has never had enough of seeing, nor the ear has enough of hearing. The New American Standard says, all things are wearisome, but man is not able to tell it. So as this universe goes on, we keep thinking we're going to find meaning from this universe, from something in here, but man can't tell it. We keep looking. We keep listening. We keep thinking, there's got to be something that's going to give me meaning. And I'll go down this path. And I'll try this path. And I'll do this thing. And it seems in the beginning, hey, this is my identity. This is who I am. And after you go down that path, there's nothing there. And all we're doing is climbing sand dunes. We're going up one, and we're thinking, if we just get over the top, there's got to be water on the other side. And we get to the top, and there's nothing there. And we're like, okay, if we just climb the next sand dune, and we get to the top, and there's nothing there. But for some reason, there's something inside of us that says, keep going. Keep going. There's got to be something. Man's will not stop. Mark Twain said, man lives in a world where he's honored for an hour and he's forgotten forever. When we pass away, people will go home and that's it. What's interesting is I remember when my Uncle Jim passed away. He was probably one of the bigger spiritual influences in my life. Just a man full of joy, loved the Lord, just one of those people that you wanted to be around. I remember being at his funeral out in Rapid City, and we were in the processional, And as we were driving, you could see people outside mowing the lawn or weeding or doing different projects. And we just went through this emotional service, and we're going to lay him where his body's going to lay. And I just remembered looking, and I was like, people, just stop. You know? Stop. This is a great man. But the world just kept going. And the world will keep going. So this is meaningless unless there's something else. Plato sought for it. Socrates sought for it. Mathematicians have sought for it. NASA is still trying to find it. Socialism thought they'd find it. Communism thought they'd find it. Other religions have been developed to try to seek it and try to develop a moral conduct, thinking that we're going to find it. Arts, science, but man will never find peace and meaning without God. Without an outside presence saying, I've got this. Paul Gauguin, the French naturalist artist, is probably his most famous painting that he did. I can't remember. I think it was something like, where do we come from? What are we? And where are we going? Or something like that is the name of his painting. It was his most famous painting. The story behind that is not only was he a natural artist, so he had these philosophies that guided him, that was everything was without God. So he looked into nature to find it. And what he ended up doing is he kept seeking. He ended up leaving his wife and his kids, and he went to Tahiti, and he painted. And his last painting was a painting of a beautiful Tahitian woman and a very old, decrepit woman, and others in between. It was kind of a painting that you read or look at from one side to the other. And then there's this feeling of death at the end. And so he has these questions, and that's where he got his questions from. Where do we come from? What are we doing? And where are we going? And he painted this, what most people consider his greatest painting, and then he goes off and he tries to kill himself. Isn't it amazing, the people, the philosophers, that the mathematicians, the biologists who have come with all the theories of how life makes sense without God, how many of them on their deathbed, how many of them went to their death by killing themselves or they went mad? Isn't it interesting that those are the people that we are studying? Verse 9. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which we can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. So it says that we won't learn, that there's no new discoveries that we think we're going to come up with. Everything has been thought of before, and somehow we think there's going to be something new we're going to develop. But it says even those that are going to become are going to be forgotten, and their ideas. So what happens is Solomon, in the last section here of the chapter, verses 12 to the end, he goes into this process. And this process covers three areas. We're going to cover one of them today and the last two next Sunday. And so he goes into this process of, he's like, so I am going to figure out the three main areas that people tend to dive into and think that there's meaning in this world. He says, I've got the authority, I'm a king, I've got the money, I've got the power, I've got the influence. If anybody can find meaning in this world, I should be able to find it. And so he kind of goes on this trip, this experiment of how can I find meaning under the sun? So he goes into three different areas. This is area number one, wisdom, intellectualism, or the knowledge of this world. So that is going to be his experiment number one. Experiment number two, he goes into pleasure, fun. Experiment number three is going to be materialism, money, stuff. Can I get enough stuff that I have enough meaning and life all of a sudden makes sense? So doesn't it sound a little bit like the college path? When you go to college, isn't it like, okay, I'm going to be smart here and learn and be educated and be philosophical? And people go into college and they learn, and all of a sudden they're around the teachers that are supposed to be the ones that are teaching them, and they look at them and they're like, their lives aren't that much better than mine. They look about just as confused outside the class as me. And so kind of the second phase of the college life is fun, isn't it? You get into fun and you drink this or smoke that or whatever, and you think, okay, this is what life's all about. And you get to the end, you're like, oh, that really wasn't it. So what's the third thing? Well, it's materialism. Let's work hard. Let's earn stuff. Let's wear nice stuff. Let's get things because that's what everybody else is doing, right? That must be what brings meaning. So these are the three main phases that Solomon says that I see happens and that we still see happening. And so let's take a look at what he does in verse 12. Verse 12, I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. So we're looking at wisdom. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. We'll see why. I have seen all things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Skip to verse 16. We'll come back to 15 in a little bit. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. And I learned this also too is a chasing after the wind. So why is chasing after wisdom and folly, and why is all this madness if you think you're getting smarter, you're understanding more and more? Go back to verse 15. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. So once you bang up your car, you can kind of go over there and try to knock out the dents, but it's always going to be banged up. What is twisted, what is banged up, will always be so. So wisdom will let you know the problems. You can identify these problems, but it won't fix them. See, you understand, man wants to be good, but does bad. But you can't fix them. You see the problems, but you can't get it changed. You see, when children are born, they're born in a way that they come out crooked. So you're not going to say, okay, kids, this is how you lie, and you have to describe it to them. It just comes. Okay? You don't have to say, kids, this is how you be selfish. You're sharing too much. We come out crooked. We come out wrong. We come out bent. And man tries to find a way within this world to say, okay, this is how you change. This is how you become a better person. Everybody thinks they want to be good or they are good, but we keep doing bad. So isn't it interesting that we have a nation smart enough to go to the moon, split the atom, but yet we can't solve murder, we can't solve trafficking, we can't solve divorce, and we can't solve child abuse. We're the smartest nation on earth. Verse 18. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. You see, education without God is a sad thing. So could you think that there was maybe a professor that would say, you know, kids, you know, biology, physics, mathematics, English, these are all good, but, you know, these are under the sun. But in order to find meaning, you have to know God, and you have to know the Bible. And so this is where you could understand creation, the fall of how, why man is the way he is, but the redemption through Jesus to bring us out, a new nature that Christ gives us, the resurrection of the dead, and heaven and eternity. What would happen if a professor would stop class and say that? Especially at a public school. He'd be fired. Isn't there a devil? Isn't it the one thing that we could say, this is where meaning is in life? That is illegal. All right. This is a horrible place to stop. But it is chapter 1. So chapter 2 is where it's going to turn around. So don't miss it next week. Otherwise, you're going to be depressed for the next couple of weeks. Okay? So I'll just pray here, and we'll wrap up. God, we love you. We thank you for this time. Thank you for this group of people. But thank you especially for the fathers today. Thank you for the influence that they have and they can have to bring meaning, to bring your word, and to affect eternity. Help us, Lord, to look beyond things under the sun, to realize our only hope and our only meaning is in you. As we pray in your name, amen.